Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Welcome to Tigers on Tap, a Go Tigers 247 audio podcast. Stepping up to the microphone are Trey Leslie and TJ Willis. Join the guys as they talk all things Memphis Tigers and their favorite beer. Turn your volume up, grab your favorite brew, and enjoy the conversation. Now, let's get to the show.
What is up? What is up? What is up? It's Trey. Back with the man that was once referred to as a stallion in a Sherpa vest, TJ. What's up, my man?
Oh, what is good? What is good? It feels good to be here after a win. Two in a row.
Two weeks in a row, little winning streak here. Whoop that trick. Whoop that trick. Whoop that trick. How about Simmons Bank 12th man on Saturday night?
I think we've seen two different sources state that not only was it louder than Ohio State, what was the second quote he said? I don't even remember it off the top of my head.
You talking about the guy, the tweets that we saw from that A-State guy?
Yeah, from the A-State play-by-play guy.
Yeah, he said, all caps, loudness warning, headphone users beware. Talking about how loud it got. And said something like, if it got that loud every Saturday, it would be a special place to watch college football. And then said, it was louder than Ohio State a week ago. However, I don't know that Ohio State really had any reason to get as loud as we were getting, but still pretty cool. I mean, I feel like there were more than 32,620 there, but shout out to those of you guys that were there. Ladies and gents out there repping the 901 on 901 day and helping the Tigs pull that one out.
Can we just talk about those final plays, how wild that was?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we'll jump into it first. You got to tell us what we're drinking tonight. Got to kick us off.
Yeah, man. We are going with High Cotton Brewing River King IPA.
Love the name there, River King.
I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but definitely a cool can.
Yeah, this is, I'm going to have to be honest, it's kind of you got to kind of roll it, because the one side is, it's fine, but then I flipped it and I saw what I'm assuming you're referring to here. Definitely a cool can. But we'll jump in. River King IPA, it is 6.2%. Our friends down at High Cotton, shout out. Wow. That was a strong first go there.
I'm going to let you know my laptop is covered in beer, so we're just going to roll with it.
That's how we do it here on Tigers on Tap. Covered in beer. All right, TJ, we've talked about it a little bit, but initial thoughts from Saturday. We were talking about the crowd. What else stood out to you? Anything in particular?
Definitely the crowd. I kind of expect about 35,000. I think came back a little short of 35 to be there, but just the atmosphere, you know, it's nice to be back at home given the awkward start of the year of the away games. But crowd, definitely the first thing. I had no issues with the ticket scanning. I know you didn't have any issues because we were side by side. We did see some weird things with people trying to scan their parking pass. That was kind of funny. But what about you?
Yeah. Yeah, crowd definitely inside. Like I said, it felt to me like more than 32,000 in there. I guess maybe some of what they've done in there with the VIP seating decks and that kind of thing maybe pushes some people down so it feels a little bit fuller than it I guess technically is, but I thought it was a good atmosphere, like you said. Yeah, the ticketing thing, I mean, unfortunate that people were having some issues, but hopefully it gets figured out, you know, here coming in this next week. People got their tickets downloaded, they're not scanning their parking passes and stuff. So but like you said, you and I downloaded, got right in, scanned immediately. We were in our seats like 10 minutes before kick. We walked over there about 15 minutes before kick, got in 5 minutes, and we're down in our seats ready to rock and roll. So
I don't think you guys are overall the audience that we should say this to, but download your tickets to your app or to your wallet, your digital wallet.
Yeah,
so Apple Pay or Google Pay, whatever you have. It makes a world of a difference. I don't even know why people downloaded that Memphis app.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust a different third-party app. I would just straight to the wallet and just hold it up to that scanner and get yourself in there. Yeah, overall, moved to 2-1. You know, those Arkansas, I got to say right off the bat, I don't think I gave Arkansas State, they're a much improved team from last year, I would say. You know, what were they, 2-10 last year, I think?
Yeah.
They could be like a 5-6 win team this year. They, you know, we talked about it a little bit that they had a pretty big roster makeover, got a lot of P5 transfers in, and you know, they're a newer team coming together, not necessarily new as in young, but just new as a team and the pieces they've kind of put together there. But I would say definitely much more talented than the Red Wolf team that we faced last year.
Oh yeah, definitely more talented. I think that if you follow me on Twitter, you've already probably seen what I'm about to talk about, but I took a snapshot of one of the running plays. Likes heads the ball. He's in the middle of snapping the ball between his legs, and Kevon Bennett is already across the line of scrimmage. Like, the ball hasn't even made it through Likes' legs, and Bennett is already across the line of scrimmage. So probably
that was a once in a life. He just perfect timing, once in a lifetime. I also, the still image you sent, it's a little grainy. I don't know what kind of device you were watching that on, but questionable, could have been an offsides call for sure.
Definitely. I think that's perfectly fair, but yeah, I mean, it definitely talented, a lot more talented, right? I mean, we didn't really get to see it with Champ Flemings. That's the one they kind of raved about for the longest time ever. And we did not get had by the 5'6" receiver Champ Flemings. So
we didn't, and I wonder how much, I mean, honestly, I don't feel like they really even tried to get him the ball that much. I think early in the game they did do a little dump off where he was doing a drag across the middle of the field, and he picked up the first down, and kind of towards the end of it, getting close to the sideline, it looked like he started kind of going a little lighter on his right leg, like he might have, I don't know, tweaked a hammy or something, but he played the rest of the game, so I don't know that that really impacted anything. But Tej, I got to give you your props, my man. You said the big tight end, Traore, right?
Yep.
You told us to watch out for him, and he had a heck of a game. Obviously, on their very first drive, two huge catches across the middle, both on third down. They were both third and longs, conversions, mm-hmm. and the second one going for what? It was a 41-yard touchdown pass, I think, or 51-yard.
I mean,
But yeah, I mean, you called that. You called it.
Anytime there is a big receiver like that, a big tight end slash receiver, hybrid, whatever you want to call him. The guy's 6'5", 220. He's not really a tight end, but there's just the mismatch that the Tigers cannot compete with. I mean, the situation there is if Quindell kind of covers him, right, you try to eliminate that one mismatch with putting Quindell on him. Well, now everyone's manned up, and you kind of put yourself in just the potential of mismatch with man defense. So it just maybe I got lucky. Who knows? We'll see how it goes this week.
Yeah, we'll see. I think UNT's got a similar sized tight end that we might need to keep an eye out on. I don't know how good Austin Anu is at throwing the ball these days, but something we'll talk about a little bit later. All right, in typical fashion with a win, TJ, let's do our good, bad, and beautiful. I'll kick off with goods. Actually, we'll get to kick. Speaking of kickoffs, we'll get to that a little bit later. Good for me. I'm going tight end Caden Priestcorn. Two touchdown catches. The first half, a heck of a first half there with two touchdown catches from Caden. Then the pancake block on the edge there to free up the corner of the end zone for Seth to get there on that keeper read. You know, we've talked about it a little bit. I think Caden even mentioned it himself, but definitely a good block that he laid there for somebody who only recently started blocking live action, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. With my good, I kind of went Caden slash the wide receivers all in general, right? I just kind of kept lumped anyone who caught the ball. Three guys north of 50 yards. They caught 19 of 27 targets, so about a 70% catch rate. Gabe Rogers stood out. You know, he's kind of come into his own after just being seen as that return specialist. He caught, what was it, 5 targets, 5 catches, 86 yards. I mean, 100% catch rate, can't complain there. I can reiterate what you said about Caden. He's been, you know, he's been someone that the staff actually really praised heavily, kind of coming through the preseason and all through the spring. And I'm not going to lie, he kind of came out looking like booty cheeks versus State. I mean, he had at least the two drops. He started missing blocks. He wasn't as advertised, I guess is how I should word that. And he's definitely turned it around. You can see that he's
first game jitters.
Yeah. For sure. And we can write it off. I don't think that's a big deal. He just seems like he's still learning the position in general, right? Still struggling with blocking from time to time. This is honestly what it is to me. When I watch him, he looks like he thinks he is still a 215-pound quarterback as opposed to a 255-pound tight end that is kind of sent out there to kind of slam his body around. So he doesn't look like he doesn't realize that he's so much bigger than he used to be.
Yeah. Well, two, he's got to understand, Caden, if you're listening, we know that you are, you've got dad strength now, my guy. You know, we know all about that dad strength out there at the GAC. Caden, you got that dad strength. Not a lot of dads out there on the gridiron at the collegiate level. So use that to your advantage, my guy. But yeah, great game from Caden. 5 catches, 69 yards, 2 tutties. But yeah, just to touch on the wide receivers, I mean, he had 7 different guys catch the ball. 360 yards through the air, 3 touchdowns. Second week in a row, TJ, not a drop. 7 guys catching it, no drops.
You love to see it.
Hopefully that week one, we used up all of our drops for the season. Just got them out of the way, you know what I mean? While we're talking about the wide receivers, I mean, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention Joe Skates and that 51-yard touchdown catch. First play, was it the first play of the fourth quarter? Very early fourth quarter.
Yeah, it was early.
But we kind of gave him a little bit of some heartache over his effort in week one. Thought that ball was maybe catchable if he'd uh, if he dove or something, but no lack of effort from Joseph Skates on that tutty there. I mean, he what got hit at like the 12 or 10 yard line, spun through, did what, I don't know what he did on that sideline to stay in bounds and break free, but a hell of an effort to get in the end zone there.
Yeah, super bullish of him once he got down there. I think he kind of got pulled into, if you go back and watch that, I think it was Eddie Lewis is kind of pulling on him to pull him in the end zone.
Yeah, and I think BT got down there too and kind of knocked somebody off of him to help out, but just a heck of a play, you know.
Yeah.
Big play, another big touchdown play. I was looking at it earlier. I think big play-wise, especially passing, we've had 12 big plays that's over 25 yards through the air passing plays. So I know it was a bit of a concern last year and what you know, people were talking about, the offense not being explosive. I feel like that explosiveness is back.
Definitely. Right?
I mean, especially at least from the wide receiver room, you've got several guys we've seen that have, you know, can beat you deep, or even, you know, Gabe's early catch, which was just sort of kind of, you know, an extended run, if you will, just threw it to him straight at the line of scrimmage and he took it for 50 yards down the field with his speed. So I at least feel like some of that explosiveness on the offensive side is back for sure for the Tigers. Still kind of, I know we've had some big runs here and there, at least one a game, but doesn't feel as explosive from the running back room. So hopefully we'll get there. But passing wise, and like you said, wide receiver group, at least these last 2 weeks have been pretty happy with. All right, anything else good that stuck out to you before we move on into the bad?
No, let's go ahead and jump to the bad, I guess.
All right, I'll let you lead us off with bad. I was going to say kickoff, but I don't even really want to talk about kickoffs.
Well, that's unfortunate because I'm going to talk about the kickoffs. It's just keep that in kickoff in bounds. Like, how hard is it? I mean, I don't want to call out his name, but you kind of have one job, and it's to kick it in bounds, right? You know? And it's only a 15-yard penalty, but it puts your already shaky defense in just like the worst possible spot. Like it basically, you know, two or three small plays, and guess what? They're already on the other side of the 50.
Yeah. Well, and it's not just, we talked about it last week, because I think we kicked two out of bounds last week at Navy, and obviously, you know, Navy wasn't able to do anything with that. But I mean, Saturday, it wasn't just kicking out of bounds. It was the time and the point in which he did it, right? There was like a minute and a half left before half. We had just scored, and you kick it out of bounds and give Arkansas State incredible field position. I mean, thank heavens that Butch Jones is a terrible game manager and absolutely, I don't know what he was doing or thinking, but two timeouts, had the ball, great field position, and I mean, doesn't try to do anything with
at
it.
All.
Literally at all. I mean, they were almost in hashtag chew clock mode. So thankfully, it didn't end up costing us Saturday. It very well could have. But moving forward, you know, you get into a game with Houston on, you know, a couple weeks from now or at SMU later in the year, and I don't think that they're going to sit on two timeouts with a minute and a half left in that starting field position. So, you got to surely – there is somebody in the city that can just kick the ball out of the damn back of the end zone. We got to figure it out. Because not only kicking out of bounds, and I don't know that this was a coaching decision or if this was even intentional, but after we score to go up five late in the game and the pooch.
What kick, the I mean, hell was that?
I don't know if that was intentional. I don't know if that was a decision that was made. But they returned it to like the 40-yard line. I don't know. So, yeah, I'm with you. Kickoffs, we better figure it out. Just find somebody that can kick it to the end zone.
I don't think that was planned. I think it was just something went wrong there, right?
Just a miss hit, hopefully. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it was your starting kickoff specialist had been benched at that point. So maybe it was just like a missed hit, which is unfortunate. But, you can't be kicking the ball out of bounds. All right, bad for me. There's a couple things I feel like I could say. Several that we've already said in previous games, but they keep coming up. I mean, third downs again. We already talked about it a little bit, but that very first A-State drive, they had two long third down conversions. I think they were like third and nine and third and eight or something.
And one that one was for a touchdown, yeah.
Yeah, straight. I mean, nothing crazy either, just a simple straight across the middle of the field. Like, I mean, they ended up being, I think, 7 of 14, so like 50%.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you gotta be better on third downs. You got to get off the field.
If you want like a silver lining on that, if you go back and look at all of the third down conversions, a bulk of them happened in the first quarter, right? I think in the second.
Oh, yeah. They started the fourth. They were five of their first six, I think. So, yeah, here. Yeah,
it dwindled down.
The first
down.
One was third and nine to your boy, Traore. Is that how you say his name?
Traore, probably.
Traore. 24 yards across the middle. Maybe a minute later, third and six from the 49, 51-yard touchdown to Traore across the middle again. I think then they had a couple third and ones they got, and then a third and seven. So they started out like five of six, but like I said, I think they finished. They were 50%. Yeah, so they were 7 of 14. But yeah, you just gotta find ways to get off the field, especially in those longer situations. So frustrating. And then second, dude, I'm going to throw a second one out there. The tackling again, I felt like we tackled so much better at Navy after that poor week at effort at State. And then it was almost back again this week. I mean, Ryan even called it out in his availability. Like, the tackling is just not where it needs to be. There were several times. I mean, I think Tyler, you know, he's done well. I've kind of expected a little more, but there was a drive in the, I think it was the first half.
Yeah, it was first half.
Where he had on one drive, like three or four missed tackles alone. There was one, you and I were right there. He popped the running back in the backfield.
Yeah.
And they just bounced off each other. And then it, you know, instead of it being a 1 or 2 yard loss, it ended up being like, a, I think, an 8-9 yard gain. And there, it wasn't, you know, not to call out Tyler, not him solo. I mean, there was Quindell had one where he could have had a tackle for a loss and dove at ankles and missed. Like, there were just several instances where, you know, there was one also in the first quarter where we had Blackman sacked on a third and six in the red zone and didn't wrap him up. He kind of finagled his way out and flipped it to a, you know, somebody out in the flats who ends up getting a first down, and then they score a touchdown out of it. So, you know, Ryan was saying that he's talked to Barnes and they're trying to figure out what it is they need to do. If it's more live reps during the week, you know, during the season, they try not to go so live because you're trying to, you know, prevent injuries and stuff. But at this point, I think you got to spend some time doing it. It's just, you got to get the fundamentals down and people got to be making tackles. When you're getting to the ball carry, you got to bring them down.
Yeah, it is a consistent issue, and it's wild. It's to your point. It seems like it happens at like the most inopportune moment. You know, you'll have somebody in the backfield, a third. We'll just make up a stat. Third and eight. You get them in the backfield, and they just sling you off. You miss the tackle. Then all of a sudden, it's a fresh set of downs, and they're just preserving these drives. And it's the little stuff like that, just keeping our defense on the field, and they're pretty much gassed at that point. And it's just. It's growing old, and eventually we're going to need somebody to step up and just make the play, you know?
Just make the play. That's all you got to do. Make a play. All right, anything else bad stick out to you that we didn't talk about?
No, we agreed on our bads, unfortunately.
On to the beautiful. We've already mentioned it. My beautiful is all of you listening, the Simmons Bank 12th man, for that incredible last drive A-State had, forcing two false starts, then the bad snap. I mean, 100% that was all due to the crowd. So great work by the Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium crowd and all of you guys listening. That energy was top of the line, and it was the play of the game for me. Well, three plays, I guess, three snaps technically. So my beautiful is all of you listening to this that were at Simmons Bank on Saturday.
You have a much better beautiful than I do, because I took the easy way out and I'm going to go with Seth. And I know that people have are starting to grow kind of weary on us just raving about Seth the entire time. But, you know, the downfall to this whole metric is that the QB is always going to get the glory, right? I mean, he completed 19 of 28, 360 yards passing, 360 yards, three passing, one rushing touchdown. I mean, he's just been great, right? I mean, he's in the top 10 in the nation in yards per game. His stats are almost identical to Stetson Bennett's from Georgia. So, like, in terms of expectations, the guy is checking all the boxes. I don't know what else he could do, you know, without being unrealistically perfect in a sense, right? I mean, there's a couple of sacks that he kind of stepped into in previous games, and maybe he could kind of find some wiggle and get his way out of there. But, you know, he's shown to be mobile when he needs to be, not in the way that, like, he's not a – sorry, Seth. You're not a dual threat in that manner, but he is cognizant enough to know that, hey, everything is shut down, but the defense is back 15 yards. Let me run up and get eight and slide and just kind of take what I can get here. So for me, it's just been great.
I couldn't agree with you more. You know, we've talked about it. We expected Seth to take a step up this year coming into his sophomore year. And I think through 3 weeks, we've seen that, that progressive step that he's taken. I mean, he looks the part, right? I mean, he looks like one of the, probably to me, I would say, you know, I haven't watched a ton of SMU this year, but I'd say right now the best quarterback in the conference. I don't know how, I mean, I know you're a big Clayton Toon fan, but I told you that the Cougs were fraudulent. I mean, they should realistically be 0-3 right now.
You did say that.
I think we got the best QB in the conference, if not one of the best in the nation. He's just so calm. He's steady. I know Silverfield called Eddie Lewis Steady Eddie, but like Steady Henny.
That makes sense.
Not too high. It doesn't have to. Not too high, not too low, even killed, makes the right plays, makes the right decisions, get the ball to his playmakers, does everything you can ask of him.
I mean, I would have gone with Heady Henny. It's a little more alliteration there, but I'm with you.
Heady Henny. I like it. Very cerebral. All right. Anything else from the paint bucket bowl?
No.
Did that feel like a rivalry game to you?
I said before the podcast, I thought it was a rivalry. It's a local team. You know, easy to drive there, easy for them to come here. It's they're respectable. You know, it's not like you're playing just a trash program by any means. I don't care that they were 2-10 last year. That game was fun. This year, they're much more improved. They seem to be a pretty good team. Butch Jones is a name. I'm not going to say he's a good coach necessarily. We haven't seen that yet. But
Butch Jones.
What about? I know you said it wasn't a rivalry. Do you still say it's not a rivalry now?
I'll say it's a good little regional matchup. I still don't think it's a rivalry.
Okay.
The game was fun. Obviously, the energy was there. The crowd was into it. It's still just I don't hate Arkansas State, and I feel like I gotta hate the team in a rivalry. You know, I hate Houston. I hate UCF. If SMU could beat us more, I'd probably hate them. So it was it's a fun little regional game. It's easy to get there, easy to come here, but it's still just, it doesn't feel like a rivalry to me. Saturday was fun, but it didn't feel like a rivalry. I know they always play as tough, but it's just not there for me yet.
It's fair.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick Six, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick Six has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick Six is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua, and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk. No. You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter, and he said, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film, and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's jump into Saturday. We got a 2:30, which the university, I don't know who over there at the athletic office, if you guys are listening, and we know that you probably are, it's not too late to change the game time to 6 p.m. We've got second summer coming in. We just had false fall. It's going to be 95 degrees or more on Saturday. So if you guys want to call it on the 2:30 and push that to 6, that would be appreciative. I'm just, TJ, you know, I think you know what game I'm about to reference here because you've got a video of me at the water. The one and only time I've ever and will ever drink out of, well, it may happen Saturday, depending on how hot it is. But as of date, the only time I've ever drank out of the water fountains at the Liberty Bowl.
Yeah, that was UCLA.
2017.
The hottest game ever.
The hottest game to date. We could top it Saturday. Weather pending. Anyway, 2:30 Saturday, Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. The line opened at 12.5. Surprisingly, that felt a little bit low to me. I just don't think, I think North Texas is far worse than Arkansas State is. It's actually dropped some. It's currently 11.5. So it's gone down a little bit. I feel like this is a two touchdown game. I kind of like that 11.5.
Yeah. With, the last game with Arkansas State, I think that started at 13 and I thought it was going to drop maybe down to a 10. And you guys were like, no, it's going to stay there. And it turns out 10 probably should have been the better number.
I said it felt like a 10-point game. It ended up a 12-point game.
That's fine. 10 covers. 13 and 14 don't. So this one, I think they got wrong.
My dumb self, actually, I teased it up to 16.5 because I thought we were about to roll the Red Wolves. So didn't win that one.
That's okay. It feels like they got it backwards, though. This is the one that it feels like is two under.
Yeah, this I feel like last week should have been the 11.5. This week should have been the 13, 14.5. But maybe what Vegas saw on Saturday that they brought it down. Maybe this was probably originally going to be about a 14.5.
I mean, I'd take this up to 21.
We're pretty bad against the spread, so maybe that's what they're taking into account. The Mean Green out of Denton. A lot of people have been looking forward to this game as the Grant Gunnell revenge game. But I don't. Are you anticipating seeing Grant at any point on Saturday?
Yeah. There's probably a good chance. I mean, the issue is
a good chance.
Yeah, because Austin Ani is awful. Literally awful.
And Grant still can't get on the field.
I think this is it. They gave him enough chance.
He played the other week and threw like four passes and had a pick. I'm going to tell you this. Two of the two of the top five worst interceptions I've ever seen a quarterback throw in my entire life have both come from Grant Gunnell. One, the spring game 2 years ago. Threw it straight down the center of the field. There wasn't a wide receiver within 35 yards of where he threw the ball. Now, maybe that wasn't all on him, but it was a horrible... I mean, you might as well have just punted the ball on first down. That's what it basically ended up being. The second, and I don't know why the video staff did this to him, but they posted a highlight of Julian Barnett picking off Grant. And we were like, oh, dang, that's a sick interception. Come to find out, you see a different angle. And then again, there was not a receiver anywhere. It was, I don't know, maybe Grant's colorblind and saw Julian over there by himself and threw it to him. But two of the worst interceptions ever thrown by a QB that I've seen have both been by Grant. I don't anticipate seeing him Saturday, but I know there's a lot of people asking questions about him. There's stories being written about him, but I don't anticipate Grant seeing the field.
Well, I don't know.
Unless, I'll take that back. When we're up 31-10, he may get a series or two.
Well, that's what I was saying. Like, Ani has been so bad that I expect him to throw two interceptions, and at that point, it's
okay.
Like,
I take it back. I don't think Grant will get any meaningful snaps.
No, it's not what you said. So we're good.
Oh, well, I know. I'm rephrasing. Not anything meaningful. He could get out there, but it's because they're going to be cheeks, and the game's going to be over.
Yeah, he's just the quarterback play is terrible. There's thought behind this. Well, hey, it's the Grant coming back. Austin Ani, I'm expecting to be bad. I would be shocked if we don't have two interceptions at this point. Just, it seems like throwing two interceptions is just kind of what Austin Ani does, right?
Shout out to Austin Ani, though. My guy's out there playing college football at 29 years of age. I mean, that's basically one of us out there. A couple years older, but can you imagine being out there playing collegiate football at 29?
No. He was a part of the...
I mean, I know we've seen some kickers and stuff do it, but... I mean, this is basically the Tom Brady of college football.
Well, he's also had a weird career. Like, he was a TCU guy, then I think,
yeah, he was a three-star QB, signed with TCU, ended up getting drafted by the Yankees organization, and I think spent 6 years in the minor league system, and then decided to pursue football. So... 6 years removed from high school before he stepped on a college football field, but shout out to him.
Took the Brandon Whedon approach.
Living the dream. You think Austin gets veteran rest days like Tom's getting?
For sure.
Wednesdays off?
Yeah, got to let the bones settle.
Yeah, you got to. What kind of classes do you think he's taking as a 29-year-old?
I'm not telling. Fly fishing?
Hey. I took fly fishing at the University of Memphis.
Yeah, I canceled. I tried.
Good class.
All right. Let's jump into the game. What? North Texas just got smacked by UNLV.
Which is weird. It was a weird game. It was 30-27 with like 7 minutes left in the third. So the first two and a half quarters were close. And then UNLV just throttled them the last quarter and a half.
Yeah, they may be worse at tackling than we are. I don't know if y'all went back and watched it. I mean, they just couldn't tackle. Everybody's bouncing off their running back. And he isn't really fast, so Ducker should be able to eat up, you know?
I mean, I think that's the thing that sticks out, right, is UNLV rushed for 365 yards. 7.2 yards a rush. I mean, that's nearly as many rushing yards in one game that we've given up all season. Now, granted, you played Mississippi State, who obviously air raid, they're not running the ball a ton. But then you played Navy the next week, who primarily only runs the ball. So I think that kind of cancels out. I think we've given up, what, like 400 yards rushing through three games? So 365 in one is quite a bit of rushing yards to give up. So not a great day on Saturday for the Mean Green. I was actually looking at some stuff earlier. It looks like Some of the main Green faithful actually are putting Seth Littrell in the hot seat, which, TJ, you feel like it's a little early for that? I think it is this his seventh year, and he's taken him to five bowl games in his first 6 years?
No.
If you're a mean Green faithful, are you already putting Seth on the hot seat?
No, he was on the hot seat a couple years ago already for me. I mean, I don't know what the expectations are at North Texas, but the moment you go from, you know, a consecutive nine win team, and then you're dropping down to four wins, there's no reason he should even come back for 2021 other than like, hey, last year sucked because it was the COVID year, right? This year, he should not have been back this year. I think that Seth has kind of been nothing since what's the offensive coordinator that was with them and then went to USC? He was a former Texas Tech quarterback. This is terrible podcasting if I can't name it off the top of my head, but Graham Harrell. He's been trash since Graham Harrell left. And if you can follow that through, I mean, once the two 9-1 seasons were gone, Graham Harrell left to take the USC job in 2019, and then since then he's just been trash. So at this point, I can't credit Seth Littrell for being good at anything other than winning four games. And somehow going 0-5 in bowl games.
So you've already fired old Coach Littrell.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the expectations are at North Texas. I mean, like, what are you really trying to – who are you trying to be, right? You're in Conference USA for now, heading towards the American. I mean, what is their expectation in the American? Are they going to be the new USF?
Shout out to USF, though. They should have won that game the other night.
They should have won that game the other night.
Could have been a big one in the swamp. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I guess it does depend on what expectations are. But, yeah, like you said, going from consistent 9-win down to 4, it's not good, Bob. Not good at all. All right, well, the series currently, Memphis leads 16-4. This will be our first matchup since the New Orleans Bowl in 2003. Before that, the Mean Green visited Memphis in the Liberty Bowl in 1980. So it's been 42 years since the Mean Green have traveled up to Memphis. Obviously, last meeting, the Tigers won in New Orleans in the New Orleans Bowl. TJ, what's a matchup on the defensive side? What does the Mean Green do well that we need to be watching out for?
Literally nothing. Is that an acceptable answer?
They don't do anything well at all. Aren't they like 25th in the nation in rushing?
Oh, you said on defense. I thought you meant their defense.
No. Our defense. Do they do anything well on offense?
Yeah. They're a really good running team. You know, they've put up a lot of strong numbers on the ground. And it's kind of funny because the head coach is a Mike Leach guy. He came from Texas Tech. He worked with him there. I think he technically worked with the running backs, but he still comes from that air raid offense. And it's just kind of funny that their strength is the running game. So, yeah, I mean, that's definitely one thing that they do well. It's I think they're fourth in the nation in rushing yard, total rushing yards this year. So, you know, if you've
got a two-back system over there, right?
Yeah. And I guess when I say this is what they do well, do you count points against 1AA teams? Let's say against
depends.
UTEP, they put up 163 on the ground. SMU, okay, they put up 202. That's pretty respectable. SMU is a decent defense. I mean, decent. Yeah,
serviceable.
This last game versus UNLV, it was 169. But they put up 348 versus Texas Southern. And I think it's inflating the numbers a bit, but I'm really just working off that 202 versus Southern Miss is kind of like a gauge point there. Because I think if you take...
So what are they? They're averaging, what, 220 on the ground a game? Is that
right? Yeah. Yeah. And if you take
out... take out that Texas Southern, it'll drop them to what?
Probably like 180 a game, which is still good.
That is still good, but it moves them from right now they would be 24th in the country in rushing yards a game. If you take out Texas Southern as an outlier, that would bring them all the way down to nearly 60th, which is still pretty good. I mean, you're still top half of the FBS, but not nearly as potent as a top 25 rushing offense.
Yeah, your feelings on the whole thing change, right? I mean, if we're complaining about Memphis not being that great of a rushing team at, you know, 135 rushing yards per game, why all of a sudden are we praising North Texas for being, you know, 20 yards better? 20 yards is obviously a big difference, but you get what I'm saying. Like, you're playing nobody and you're running against nobody. But I do think that is something that they will do well. I've said it 1,000 times, their quarterback sucks, so I'm not too worried about the passing game.
Sure. So, yeah, like we mentioned, Adai averaging almost 7 yards a carry. Attaway, 5.2. So, two guys we should keep an eye on. You know, like you mentioned, a lot of that probably came against Texas Southern, but they had a decent ground day against SMU, so they obviously are capable, even though a large majority of that came against a lower-tiered opponent. But so that's kind of – I had that initially before we kind of ran through it, but just our linebackers versus their running backs. If there is anything they do well offensively, it would probably be running the ball. I could see this being something where they come in and are trying to pound it on the ground and maybe eat up some clock, limit possessions with the, you know, with as strong as an offense as we've kind of had the last several weeks. Try to keep the ball out of our hands, shorten the game up. So, you know, I think our linebackers, our front seven, are going to have a big game and kind of slow down what rushing attack the Mean Green may have on Saturday. What about us defensively? What do you have us as a matchup wise?
I'm curious to see our secondary versus their wide receivers. And that is just because, again, I'm not – Austin Ani's not that guy. And this is a matchup that our secondary should not get toasted in. You know, we're not going against Will Rogers. This isn't State. You know, these aren't 6'2"-plus wide receivers, right? You know, they do have a big tight end. And I said I'm not scared of Austin Ani. I am scared of the tight end just because, you know, I have a rule – with big tight ends that create mismatch. And Jake Roberts is a guy that I think could create a mismatch. Same tight end position type of situation that we kind of worked with against Arkansas State. So it's not that
I... 6'5", 240 or something.
Yeah, like I'm not... It's not that I think the quarterback's just going to air it out. I think it's just the dink and dunk and then no one's watching the tight end situation, so... But I do think the tight end, the cornerbacks, the safeties, they should look pretty good. We should see some pass breakups. You know, maybe I definitely think two interceptions is not out of the ask at all.
What about TJ calling for who gets the two interceptions?
I mean, at this point, Quindell seems almost automatic. And I will say I've been impressed by Davion Ross lately, so I'm going to say Davion Ross.
So I was going to mention that. Do you think I noticed on Saturday at times they were series-wise, they were swapping out Davion Ross and Julian Barnett over there on the opposite side of Greg. You think we continue to see that?
Yeah. It's the same logic that we have on offense, right? You know, Silverfield talks about, you know, we have six wide receivers that we can rotate in. We'll always have fresh legs and things like that. I think it's the same thing with cornerbacks, you know, I kind of got some criticism, I think, earlier towards the year when I said that this is one of the deeper secondaries I think we've had. And what I mean by that is, you know, we can roll in, you know, Greg Ruman's going to start, but you can rotate in Davion Ross. You can roll in Cam Smith. You can roll in Julian Barnett. You know, it just really depends on the matchup and who you're playing. Ladarian Polk, another guy. Just kind of what you're looking for in terms of match. Like Greg Ruman was playing the slot all last game. That's not something he normally does, right? He's normally a boundary guy. So to see him move inside just to compare on the matchup and kind of rotate Julian Barnett, who is a taller corner. I think they say he's like 6'1", 6'2", for some of those taller matchups. Same with Cam Smith, kind of a taller corner there. I just that's kind of where I'm coming from. You have that flexibility of working in some other guys and just having the fresh legs and feeling comfortable that they will be able to be out there and make a play.
Yeah, I don't. It'll be interesting to see. I don't know that we'll see a series for series swap like we were seeing. I was going back and watching some of the Arkansas State game, and there were several series that Barnett was in where he was kind of consistently getting beat by your boy Traore, whatever.
Traore.
So it just kind of worries me. He, like you mentioned, he is a bigger bodied DB, but when they lined him up on a bigger bodied wide receiver, or tight end, whatever you want to call that matchup, like, he just wasn't effective, to be honest. So yeah. I wouldn't be surprised to see Davion Ross get a majority of the snaps on Saturday and less of that kind of rotational series for series switch.
Sure. What's your matchup?
You mentioned Ruben in the slot. How much of Ruben Island do you think played an impact to old Fleming's not having a good game?
I know you pointed out that he kind of pulled up with the hammy. You cannot convince me that man was not just locked down on Ruben Island. Like
They did take the one deep shot on the seam down the middle, and Ruben was there step for step, made a perfect play on the ball.
Yeah, I think that Ruben was just a perfect matchup. You know, that what happened with State is everyone was just so much bigger, right? And I mean that like 6'2 plus. Like, I know they have some shorter guys, but the bulk of them, 6'2, 6'5, they just physically outmatch us. And then once you start to get in these matchups where, you know, you're playing the guys that are the same size as you, I'm not worried about that. And it's not that I think we're going to get burnt deep because Champ Fleming's was supposed to burn us deep. I mean, he did that versus Ohio State, and that's just not the issue we had. So I think once we start playing North Texas, Temple, some of these smaller ones, you know, not until we get to SMU do I think we have a size mismatch with a lot of these teams. So I think we should start to see some of these numbers kind of pan out for us.
All right. So on to our offensive side, what's a matchup that we need to look out for that you're looking forward to on Saturday?
Ooh, I'm still trying to narrow it down. So I'm going to let you go ahead and do yours. And that way I can narrow mine down to make sure we don't say the same thing.
All right, I'm going our offensive line versus their defensive line. You know, we said over 150 last week. Obviously, you struggled for probably the first half of the game running the ball. Picked up in the second half. I mean, Silverfoot alluded to it. Some of that early stuff is body shots you're taking. You want those early blows kind of wear a defense down, and then it opens up the rushing attack later in the game. We did see a little bit of that, but I mean, North Texas gives up 500 yards of offense. They gave up 365 yards rushing last week. If there was ever a game for our rushing attack to take a step forward, I think it's Saturday. So I think this is an opportunity. Their defensive line doesn't appear to be very good.
Yeah.
Not a lot of sacks, not a lot of TFLs. You know, this seems like an opportunity for the line to work out some kinks. You could build a little bit of, you know, momentum, a little bit of continuity with each other, understanding, and open up some holes for the running backs. And hopefully, I'd like to see us eclipse the 200 mark. And you know what else I'd like to see? We saw a little bit. We got a little sprinkle of it on Saturday. There's a little SS, a little Sutton Smith out there.
Yeah.
He got three carries for 21 yards, 7 yards a carry. If he can do that every week, what are we holding my man back for?
Yeah, and I think Ryan kind of gave us that that level of comfort that we're going to see some more Sutton Smith, and that perhaps he is not going to be limited and handcuffed to those four games.
Yeah, I'm not so confident anymore that he would be redshirted as I might have once been, where they were going to keep him to four. If he can come out and continue to help the running game out, I think we might see a little bit more of him. All right, what's your Tigers offensive matchup you're looking for? Did I just steal yours?
You did, but I had another one planned out just in case. I'm going to go with Caden Priestcorn versus just the middle of the field. I think that, you know, Silverfield talks about body blows. And usually when he referenced that, you know, he's talking about just like those little gashing runs, just like the annoying like 5, 6, 7 yard gain, just boom, 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 yeah. boom. I think reference that with Caden Prescorn because they're going to keep trying to target him over the middle and just kind of pinch everyone in just to make sure they take that middle away. Because the moment you take the middle away, that's when you have Gabe. That's when you have Skates. That's when you have Eddie. Someone just burning down the sideline. And just those extra 3, 4, 5 yards that safety has kind of stepped inward to maybe protect the middle is going to give our receivers the outside edge. So I'm going to say that they're going to target Prescorn right over the middle over and over and over again. So that's where I'm going to go there. It's just Prescorn versus the world.
Yeah, I almost feel like this is just a game where offense should be able to do whatever it wants.
Definitely.
You know, I mean, they're 128th, I think, in total defense as it relates to yards given up per game. At 503 yards a game, they are giving up almost 37 points a game defensively, 300 through the air, 200 on the ground. I just think it's going to be that kind of day where we see 350, 375 from Seth, and then hopefully, you know, a 200 day from the running backs. I think this is one where the Tigers offense can almost score at will, if you will.
Sure.
So yeah. looking forward to that on Saturday.
SMU beat them 48-10, and I don't, you know, there's no reason for us to not be able to replicate that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's jump into our picks for the game. So give me, I'm going to say first Tutty, but at this point.
Yeah, it's a lock.
I mean, we got, yeah, well, I mean, who? What are we even talking? It's got to be Caden, right? Prescorn.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just become a lock. I mean, that's like, what was that, 2 years ago when we were all about the Davante Adams first touchdown for the Packers? It hit like
every game.
Seven out of 10 times, 70% hit rate. I mean, I feel like that's, you know, we'll give it one more week, but I feel like we'd be foolish to both not pick Prescorn for first Tutty. That's just kind of where we're at.
Just to be different, I will take Gabe just to change it up. But it's going to be Prescorn, but I'm going to take Gabe.
I'm going to change it up too.
What the?
And I mean, it'll probably be Prescorn, and we should probably put the money on Prescorn first Tutty. But just to be different, I'm going to say the first touchdown's a defensive touchdown. One of your two picks is on their first drive, and it's a pick six.
It's very likely.
And it's your boy Greg Rubin.
Well, that's just a callback to your pick I'm the still, first year
yeah.
before the year.
Well, hey, it still would count. It would still be our first defensive touchdown.
It's fair.
I just picked it week one. I'm still riding with it. All right, give me your offensive game ball.
My offensive game prediction. Ball. I'm going to say Gabe Rogers. I saw the way that Rice from SMU was able to torch him. So I think Gabe can do the same.
I like it. I'm going to go, I know he got it week one. I'm going to go Jay Ducker again. I think we see a heavy dose of Jay. I think he breaks a 100-yard mark, scores on the ground. I'm going to go Jay offensively.
Yeah, I think a lot of people will like to hear that.
All right, defense.
I think we're going to have a good game from... I'm struggling. I'm trying to go not Tyler Murray. I'm going to say Jaylen Allen. He's kind of been all over the place lately. I just maybe not getting in the backfield and getting the sacks that we thought he may be able to get, kind of rushing off that end, but he is making just a ton of tackles. And Ani, the one thing that he does mediocrely well is just getting out and kind of scrambling when he needs to. And I think that Allen can kind of help contain that. So I'm going to go with Jaylen Allen.
Okay. I mean, I would be foolish to pick Greg to have a pick six and then not pick him as defensive game ball. So I'm going to go with old Greg for if he's going to have a pick six, he's going to get game ball. All right, on to the score prediction. Like we mentioned, Right now, the line's 11.5. Over under is 68.5. You got a score prediction?
I do. I've changed it twice. I'm going to go Tigers 41, North Texas 21.
Okay. I will go Tigs. I'm going to say 45-17 final.
45-17?
Yeah.
I like that.
None of this can't handle another week where we go down with 4 minutes left and then still almost cover. I can't handle that again. I just want a good, comfortable Saturday afternoon. I'm probably going to be dehydrated. I'm going to be sweating my backside off. Just give me a comfortable 45-17.
Respectable. I think people are going to like to score more than mine.
You were 41-21, and then I'm 45-17?
Yes.
All right. Let's jump into this River King IPA. I got to say, this was good. I'm not like the world's big. I know you're a big IPA guy. I'm not the world's biggest IPA guy, but this was a good. I think this is a juicy IPA.
Yeah.
Yeah. Says it there on the can. A juicy IPA that lives up to its name. The King is a deep straw color and has an intense tropical fruit aroma that leads to a big punch of pineapple, orange, and melon. Rounded off with a smooth mouthfeel and subtle citrus. I'm going to be honest. I didn't get the big punch of pineapple.
I didn't get the pineapple punch either.
I mean, that's kind of like our Red Wolves writer that posted on our board about Memphis taking one on the chin.
One right on the chin, huh?
I was expecting a big punch of pineapple. I didn't even feel it. It's a swing and a miss. It was good, though.
No, I see what he's talking about with the tropicalness. Like, I got that. Like, so it's not just IPA that I like. It's really these juicy, like these hazy IPAs that I like.
You would like juicy.
For sure. And I see what they're talking about, and I really like this. This one's really good. And normally
Royally juicy.
Royally juicy, of course. I'm really not the biggest fan of high cotton. Some of the stuff they do is pretty good, but this one I really like. So I'm going to do the can first. Definitely a cool can. I kind of said it earlier. If you kind of like rotate it in light, you kind of get a little more than I think what meets the eye at first, right? You get some things that are like shining, like especially in like the high cotton logo. There's like some red in there I didn't see before.
Yeah. A little metallic red and gold on the can for sure. That looks good in light. Yep.
Yeah. And then they touch on that random part of Memphis that is like Egyptian based for some strange reason. I get like the Memphis Egypt thing. I get that. But like
pyramid, there's a little pyramid in there.
And whatever the hell this skull thing is on the back. This thing's badass.
Well, it's a pharaoh. It's a pharaoh. Just a,
yeah, a bearded pharaoh.
Well, a bearded skeleton pharaoh.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a cool design.
Yeah, so I like that. I'm going
to you see the cotton on his headdress?
I do see that. That kind of plays into the name. And it's high on his head. High cotton.
You got the pillars. This is a good can. I'm going to go can. I'm going to do it. You're taking too long. This can's a good can. I'm going to say the can is a, this is like a 6.8 can for me. It's a good can.
I like it more than that. I was going to say like a 7.6 can.
Wow. I really say like very high. That's a big can.
I like it. There's a lot going on. I like the shininess of it. I think if I were to hand this to my son, he would just play with it.
It's grown on me more. Like I said, I originally looked at the one side of it where it just has the high cotton and it's not, it looks good, but it's just, it's not, there's not a whole lot of design there. But then you rotate and you get to the skeleton pharaoh.
It's the pharaoh side.
I mean, this is a badass can on that side.
My God, how are you going to call it badass and then say it's like a six something?
Well, because not both sides are badass. You only have one side that's badass.
Yeah, it's really badass though.
It is. I mean, if you doubled up the sides, if both sides, front and back, were badass, it would be a much higher. 6.8's a good score. That's a good score. For the beverage, this was good. It was a good juicy IPA. I'm going to go, I'll go 7.4 on this. This was a good juicy IPA.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to, I feel like if I put another one in the 8, people are like, this guy's just crazy. I will say a 7.9. I really like this, but it's also kind of like right down my alley. So I know it's not going to appeal to a lot of people, but at 6.2%, and it's got a lot of flavor and it's not like super hoppy. You know, when people think IPA, they think of like straight hops to the face. Well, this kind of eliminates that with that fruity flavor, that juiciness we were talking about earlier. So I'm going to go 7.9.
I don't know. My first sip was pretty hoppy punch to the jaw.
Yeah, but you get used to it, though. That fruitiness comes out. Yeah,
I got used to it, but initially there was quite the bit of hop. All right. So what'd you say, 7.9?
7.9. Pretty good. I like it a lot.
Shout out High Cotton.
Shout out to High Cotton.
Good product. Good product there in the River King IPA.
All right, man. Anything else?
I think we're done, my guy. So for the Stallion and Sherpa, TJ, this is Trey. Come for a cold beer, stay for the hot takes. Peace.
Thank you for listening to Tigers on Tap. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a rating and a comment wherever you listen to your podcast. If you are interested in content all about the University of Memphis Tiger Athletic Program, hop over to www.gotigers247.com. New articles are published daily, and you can join the Go Tigers 247 family by signing up for VIP.
CBS Monday.
NCIS! Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island, they got here.
Walking to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday starting at 9/8 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.